Good morning, and welcome to Socialist Alternative Radio. I'm sorry, Socialist Radio. We're changing our name. I haven't told anyone yet. Socialist Radio. Sorry I didn't get that out for you. Ear Buddies is exiting the studio. Thank you, Ear Buddies, and hope you had a good show. And see you in the 2020 when we'll all be riding flying cars or something. Doesn't that sound like a a science fiction year to you, 2020?
It does.
I can't believe that we don't have flying cars yet. I'm really pissed off.
So Jetsons, what happened?
Yeah, what happened? No, really. I mean, come on. We deserve more. We deserve socialism in 2020. Come on. So anyway, you're listening. You're about to listen to Socialist Radio with myself, Jeff, and
Diego.
Diego brought in the Fugees. Can I see the Fugees there for a minute? Thank you so much.
Number 10.
Yes. And we are here, Socialist Radio, every other Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., and we are all about talk and music from a working class, democratic socialist perspective. In fact, we're just talking about working security, and there's a lot of people, I think, running around the U.S. that at some point, a lot of workers, at some point have had a security job. So I had a security job at the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston, Massachusetts.
The one down the street from...
Yeah. Yep. And that's one of these uniquely Boston institutions.
Was that... who's that?
Not uniquely, but I'll explain
Native American
in a minute. Yeah, exactly.
Has he been there for a long time, or is that something...
That's a good question. I think that's been there a long time.
Yeah.
They make it seem like he's praying to his spirits, his gods. But I think he's more like really really angry. Yeah, I think he's really distressed, actually.
This is what happened. That's what I get from that, watching every time I go by it on the train. I'm like, oh my God. That says a lot.
Hey, is your mic working?
It's working.
Can you hear it? Yeah, okay.
I can hear it.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Well, you know, that security job, I tried to organize a union when I was there, and we almost won the election, but we didn't quite. So I learned a lot from that. And they of course fought the union, spent tens of thousands of dollars or more fighting it. And eventually a union did get in there. Usually, you know, when there's a union drive, not usually, but a lot of times when there's a union drive, it takes another like 5 years or whatever. It took a little longer than that, but there was a union there. And I don't know what happened to the union, because they tried to be like an independent union, which is kind of, I understand the appeal of that, because there's a lot of unions that are... It's always better to be in a union than not be in a union, by the way. A little caveat there, a little qualifier. But because some things can happen that can change a union, either from outside or inside or both. But there are unions where it's very frustrating to be a union member, like the union I'm in, the Clerical Workers Union at Harvard. Very frustrating to be a union member, because there's just no internal life to that union at all. And it's got such potential to fight management and to be a rallying point for the labor movement, really. And that's how I thought it was going to go, and it turned into we want to be partners with management, business unionist operation, so they don't fight hard enough for the people, they don't fight hard enough for the workers, they don't fight hard enough for other
like
the grad students are on strike. Why aren't we on strike alongside of them? You know, why aren't the dining hall workers at Harvard, who just had a really good strike 2 years ago, why aren't they on strike alongside the graduate students at Harvard? That's how you win. That's how you win strikes. That's how the labor movement built itself. It did illegal things, meaning solidarity strikes, believe it or not, are illegal. A lot of our listeners might not realize that, but I heard some idiot on national, I was telling you before off the air, some complete moron on national propaganda television today, you know, public television, where they, some person from Russia who was very pro-capitalist and talking about, you know, in really stupid generalizations about autocracy versus democracy and all this other stuff, understanding neither term, you know, uh-huh. And basically saying, back when the United States was, when everyone was equal and free, uh-huh. I'm like, oh, when was that? Would that be during Jim Crow, or when women couldn't vote, or was it when Native Americans were being slaughtered, or was it slavery? Was it during the Vietnam War, where people were out protesting so their sons wouldn't get sucked into a bloody war machine? Was it, you know, when was that exactly? I don't remember that. Equal, huh? I'm equal to Bill Gates? Really? That's interesting. That's an interesting take on society, you moron. And anyway, so this person, you know, is nattering away on television early in the morning on a Sunday. My fault for watching, I guess. But And it's just absurd. It's completely, completely wrong. And here we are, Socialist Radio. We're going to tell you some truth. And I'm not. We're not afraid of that word. We will tell you truth here. We'll talk truth here. We really will. And that doesn't mean everything we say is right. Doesn't mean everything we try, though. We try. And some of it is truth. Some of it is just truth. It's just
science,
there's no way around
dialectical it. Dialectical.
Yes, terms. It's based on science. It's based on rational, empirical and dialectical knowledge that, processes at work in this society. And anyway, what I was getting at
was... We don't sugarcoat here.
No sugarcoating. But what was the original point there was something about... Oh, yeah, working security. Yeah, so... So organizing unions, and that if you lose one point, you can win at another. It's always better to have a union than not have a union. But one thing I learned, and I started to say this earlier, I've worked in these big institutions in Boston, because like MFA, Harvard, others, because that's where you get your jobs around here. You know, no manufacturing left. You know, I blew into town. I applied for a factory job. In the exact kind of factory I used to work in. As I was walking through the place, I was like, I know I could do this job right now. They don't even have to train me.
Kind of bakery?
Yeah, it was a big bakery down near the North End, believe it or not, near the this is back in the 80s, near Boston Garden, or whatever they call it now. And it was just exactly like where I worked. Like the smells, the machinery, everything would look the same.
The dough.
And I'm like, and the guy was really nice in a way. I mean, in terms of his superficial whatever, the human resources guy or manager or whatever. He's like, well, there's no jobs here. And in fact, the place closed a couple of years later, I think 2-3 years later. We can't hire you here, but we can hire you in one of our stores, you know, because they own these convenience stores, these packies or whatever you want to call them. Convenience store, Packy. What's the latest thing for a store like that?
Grocery,
like a Store 24. No, like a Store 24.
Oh, okay.
One of those types.
Yeah.
So I'm like, and he told me the pay, and I'm like, no, I can't, no, sorry. I was used to making more. I was a union bakery worker before that, you know. So that was the part that was the beginning of the end for me. I was like, living in Boston has been a struggle ever since.
Story about when I was collecting unemployment 2000 when I got laid off from that, that one job that went under. So I started collecting.
Which job?
The Whoop Burger place.
Okay. Yeah.
Little place around the corner from my house. It's kind of convenient, but you know, and so I was collecting. This happened around November before 2016.
Yep.
So then you know me, I got to mobilize. I got to say, hey, I'm collecting right now, but at the same time, I got to start looking. And I got lucky at Chipotle in Central Square.
Okay.
And the minute that they told me what I'm going to get paid, I looked at him and said, sir, I make more unemployed than I do here employed. Yeah, $10 exactly. an hour? Are you serious?
Yeah. They just raised the minimum wage here. I was listening to WBZ radio, one of the largest signals. It's an AM station. One of the largest signals in the country, one of the oldest radio stations. And they said, yes, the minimum wage has gone up. It will go up January 1st, 2020 in Massachusetts. I think it's like 12 maybe or 12.75 or something like that. And they're making it seem like a big deal. I'm like, oh my God, that's poverty wages around here.
15 is still poverty wage.
Yeah, I know. And
I'm making more than
then,
that. I still feel it. Yep. I still feel low. No, I mean, that's not enough.
No, not enough. And then on top of that, they threw in the statistic without attribution, without citation. They said, and this will cost X number of jobs, 1.2 million jobs over the course of the minimum wage raises set to happen from now until 2025 or something. Because the Democrats stretched it out. You know, Democrats control the state, and they put in one of the weakest minimum wage increases ever, except for the national one, which has been stuck, you know, at nothing, at 720, what is it, 725 or something like that. Anyway, but the point is, so they throw in this spurious statistic about job losses. Every study I've read, studies about Seattle, where they first raised the minimum wage citywide, there have been job gains, not job losses.
Yeah,
you put more money.
More money.
You put more money.
The economy is more vibrant.
Believe me, a small business that doesn't have, or a medium-sized business, or a big business that doesn't have other reasons to close, they don't close always for the reasons they say. They have an ideology. They'll say, oh, we're closing because the costs of labor are too high. Turns out they're still making profits, though. They're looking at their rate of profit. They're looking at investing somewhere else. Investing isn't a kind term for what they're doing. They're looking to exploit labor somewhere else for a greater return.
Yeah.
On their profit. So what? There's no law that says we must create society. Society is not created here for your maximum short-term profit. That's not our rate of profit going up all the time. That doesn't, that does not matter to me at all, and it shouldn't matter to anyone. Yeah. No. If you can't run that business, we'll take it under public ownership if it's something that we need. Yeah. And if it's not, see you later. We'll give full pay, retraining to the workers that are displaced. The bosses can go screw. We give them nothing. And that's how we need to operate.
I was talking to somebody about, you know, I was saying, well, I got laid off or let go from Whole Foods, and they're like, oh, so much for conscious capitalism, that Joe Mackey, huh? He sold out to Amazon, didn't he?
Yeah.
So much for Joe. What do you call it? That book he came out with.
Yeah.
conscious capitalism.
There've been a lot of those books written, and they're all toilet paper. They're all garbage, you know. That one was obvious from the start. You know, you used to tell stories on the air about that, how they were cutting full time and all that.
I used to joke around. Oh, don't be surprised one day that, you know, we get bought out by Walmart or Amazon. That's not going to happen. sure enough.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So don't be surprised. I'm just, you know, my Marxist mind doesn't lie to myself.
Yep. No, I know. And even when it was firmly under their control, they still did a lot of nasty things, and you used to talk about them, you know, understaffing and all of a sudden cutting back on benefits, and all of a sudden going from full-time to part-time, you know, and all
what's
that
the
stuff.
Definition of part-time now is 32 hours, not 40. You want more hours? These apartments need help, so you can go to that department. So you're doing two departments instead of being in your own original department just to make 40 hours.
Wow. Yep. So now I've lost something I need to find. Sorry. Let's just see. It always happens to me. Anyway.
Technology. Huh?
Yeah. I feel like I gotta throw some music on so I can get this. What number did we want here? Fugees? All right.
Yep,
so anyway,
10.
We're going to have a lot to talk about today. We've got stuff about just general socialism versus capitalism stuff. We have end of the year type stuff. Check in with what's going on in France. Check in with the latest Democratic Party reality versus delusions that people have in them. And stuff about unions, etc. Continue that discussion. So you're listening to Socialist Radio on WMFO 91.5 FM, otherwise known as WMFO Medford or WMFO in Medford, otherwise known as Tufts Freeform Radio, community-based, commercial-free, all sorts of good stuff, and otherwise known as Tufts Educational Radio. So many different names, because it is a lot of shows, eclectic play, freeform, you know, lots of different types of music going on here, and some talk, and we are talking music. So stay tuned. We're going to throw some Fugees on, and we'll be right back.
Have you ever worn the mask? Yeah. 1 2 1 2. M to the A to the S to the K. Put the mask on the face just to make it next day. Feds be hawking me, jokers be stalking me. I walk the street and camouflage my identity. My posse in a Brooklyn wear the mask. My crew in a Jersey wear the mask. Pick up kids doing boogie woogie wear the mask.
Yeah, everybody wear the mask, but how long will it last?
I used to work at Burger King, a king taking orders. Punching my clock, now I'm wanted by the manager. Souping me up, saying,
you're a good worker. How would you like a quarter raise? Move up to the register. Large in charge, but you gotta be a spy. Come back and tell me who's bagging my fries. Getting high on company time.
Hell no, sirree. Wrong MC. Why should I be a spy when you're spying me? And you see what you thought you saw but never seen. You missed the last move. Checkmate, crown me king. Pull my 22, pistol whip them in his face. Hiya, now I'm fired. Sober, now I'm wired. Ice pitch red, but the beat bop my head hit the streets for relief. I bumped into feds, I got kidnapped, they took me to D.C. Had me working underground building missiles for World War III.
M to the A, to the S, to the K, put the mask upon my face just to make it next day. Brothers be gaming, ladies be claiming. I walk the street and camouflage my identity. My posse uptown wear the mask.
My crew in the Queens wear the mask. Pick up kids with the Tommy Hill wear the mask.
Yeah, everybody wear the mask, but how long will it last? I thought he was the one done. I was stung on by his lips. Taking sips of a normal red O'Sour with a twist. Shook my hips to the baseline. This joker grabbed my waistline. Putting pressure on my spine, trying to get elbow to one. I backed the ball from then I caught him. With 5 fingers to his face. I had to put him in his place. This kid's invaded my space. But then I recognized the smile, but I couldn't place the style. So many fronts in his mouth. I thought he was the golden child. Then it hit me, that's Tariq from off the street around my grand. I haven't seen him since 15 when he got booked for doing scams. I tried to walk away, but he wouldn't let me leave. He ran him quick behind me asking, yo, what happened to my nigga Steve? Steve was like this kid I went with back in grammar school. I chuckled, knucklehead, I seen him yesterday. He's busted, so who you checking for now? Probably some intellectual. I kept the conversation straight, but he kept trying to make it sexual. Yeah, his old lady tried to play me, waved her hands up in my face. Yo, I told her check your man, cause bitch, you acting out of place.
M to the A to the S to the K. Put the mask on my face just to make it next day. Brothers be front, then they be running. I walk the street and camouflage my identity. My posse in the Bronx wear the mask. My crew on the aisle wear the mask. Stick up kids rolling in the Omni wear the mask.
Yeah, everybody wear the mask, but how long will it last?
3 a.m. in the morning, on a boulevard. I'm still at large, engaged with my entourage. Me and Godfather in the 67 Dodge. I stepped out then looked, then post up my guard. Searching for my car that was stolen from Scotland Yard. My first instinct was to check the chop shop garage. As I rung the bell, someone tapped me on my back. I turned around and looked, it was a rookie in a mask. He said, I got an itch on my trigger. Don't move, nigga, I'm taking you for murder. See, cops are two faces like two laces on my Reebok. My knees knock as I step back for a clear shot.
Yo, did you shoot him?
Nah, kid, I didn't have the balls. That's when I realized I'm bumping too much Biggie Smalls.
To the S to the K, put the mask on your face just to make the next day. Runners be beefing, cops be beefing, brothers be scheming, it should be teaming. Jokers be smoking and staying broken. Bitches be teasing and money squeezing. Niggas be creeping, baby mothers be weeping. I walk the street and camouflage my identity. My posse in Haiti wear the mask. My crew in Jamaica wear the mask. Stick up kids bumping Fuji La wear the mask.
Yeah, everybody wear the mask, but how long will it last? Said.
Shit was ill, man. It was ill. Yo, bullets everywhere, guns, smoke. Jokers falling off their porches, just shooting straight cowboys, man. Straight motherfucking cowboys.
That was the Fugees with
The Mask.
The Mask from The Score, 1996 release.
When hip hop used to be hip hop, not this commercial stuff we hear today.
Yeah, it seems like a long time ago since we're about to hit 2020. So if you're expecting,
for me, it seemed like yesterday.
I know. Yeah.
Right.
If you're expecting this big, like,
it's like you with the Clash. It seemed like yesterday.
Yeah.
It's been what 30 years or so.
Yeah. Somebody posted, Nick actually, who's been on the show, posted a thing about a band called Fear. There was a punk band that was put on. They were on Saturday Night Live.
Mm-hmm.
And they got banned from Saturday Night Live. Then that was linked to an article where Elvis Costello got banned from Saturday Night Live. And I never liked Saturday Night Live. Even the comedy, just didn't really like it very much. Never got into it. I guess I'm the last person that
way. Is that the one they make, what's his name, makes fun of, acts like Trump?
Yeah, yeah.
Alec?
Yeah, Alec Baldwin is on that now, I guess, or whatever his name is. I don't know. It's this guy, there's a producer behind it that runs the show, which is, his name is Lauren Michaels. I call him Board Michaels, and he's the one that he makes them read, because when Andy Kaufman, you know that comedian that died who from the 90s or 80s, Andy Kaufman was on the show, he would like do stuff that people weren't expecting. He would like ad lib or act differently than they'd rehearsed, and so Lorne Michaels got so pissed off that he made, this was way back, this is a while ago, he made it so like every show they have to read off of cue cards everything they do, and you can see it. It's very obvious they're doing it. To me, it's very obvious. I mean, it's a ridiculous,
so it doesn't flow.
Boring show to me.
It doesn't
yeah.
flow the way it
I
should
never
be.
Liked it. Never doesn't flow. Doesn't flow. Doesn't do garbage.
Yeah. I like Living Color. I remember that show. So yeah, that free, do what you want. Jim Carrey got his fame out of that. All these other actors got fame out of that.
Yeah.
That's where they all started.
Hey, is there another Fuji song we should put on later?
No.
No, that's it. Just that
swearing
one.
Thing. I can...
All right.
The only bad thing about hip hop, you know.
Well, I don't know. Or a bad thing about society.
I like it, but unfortunately, we're not in a situation where...
Uh-oh, it's not coming out. There it goes. Yay. All right. So anyway, you're back. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Socialist Radio with myself, Jeff, and...
Diego.
And we're here till 1, and we're here every other Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., talking music from a working class, democratic socialist perspective. And I saw this article in... I think it was from Jacobin, magazine, jacobinmag.com, their website, 2019, looks like on October 2019. And funny it doesn't give an exact date, but anyway. So it's called The Work Ethic Under Socialism by Megan Day. And it caught my eye right away because I know that in discussions I've gotten, you don't always have the opportunity to get an in-depth discussion about socialism with people. You mentioned that guy in the hospital, right?
Mm-hmm.
From the 20s.
Yeah. 90-year-old or in the 90s. I'm like, wow, what's his secret?
And he said he was a socialist?
Back in the 20s and 30s.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry. During the 30s or 40s, you know, when the labor movement was.
Yeah.
That's you had the Depression, you know, people were in the Communist Party or...
Yeah, but you had a bit of discussion with him. You had time to discuss him a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, he goes, I feel sorry for you, generation.
Yeah, no, I don't blame him. But anyway, it's a, it's you know, there's times where you get in discussion with people, and if they're new to socialism, don't quite understand it, they will often bring up this idea of, well, how will anyone work? You know, why would anyone work under socialism? People just be lazy.
It's like devoid. They don't make it seem like socialism is devoid of an economy. No.
Yeah.
If anything, it's going to be an economy, a planned economy.
Yeah.
And it's going to be vibrant.
Yep. And they also have opposite of what they're saying. Opposite of what they're saying. It's a question of where does the motivation come from to work? Even under capitalism, you have a lot of people working every day doing work that's not recognized as work. Because it's not paid by a corporation or some business, that it would be the work, obviously, of taking care of your family, you know, children, the work of, cooking, cleaning, laundry work, house repair, shoveling the driveway, all the things it takes to survive, you know, driving yourself around. If I was an Uber and I got money for driving, just driving around, I make a little bit of money, you know. I don't get paid for that. I don't get paid for my commute to work. I should, but I don't. So there's a lot of stuff people do for their families and for other people. People volunteer, quote unquote. That's work, right? You put the label of volunteer on it, it's somehow diminished. It shouldn't be. That's work. And it's important work, really important work. And for a lot of people...
It's one of the gains that Chavez, one thing that he did good, it's like, hey, these domestic... mothers are, you know, cooking or doing whatever, at, you know, or they got some kind of money or funds, you know.
And that was
you recognize that as work. Like, no, that's work.
That was one of the things the Russian Revolution did for women, and there were a lot of women participating in the revolution because of it as well. It overthrew this very backward, you know, capitalist society
that
still had a lot of czarist ideas, a lot of feudal ideas in it. And women were being exploited more, their labor was being exploited in factories and so on, and that took them out of the home. They got organized, often as socialists, as Marxists in the Bolshevik Party, but also in unions and stuff, and but less time then to take care of children, so it was a huge problem, like it is in capitalist society in general. On the way here, I heard a thing on National Propaganda Radio about in Japan, for the first time in recent years, or just recently, they've introduced paternity leave, paid paternity leave. However, the corporations are fighting it. In Japan, the attitude, apparently a lot of people are brainwashed into the idea that, or the corporations are pushing this idea always, that if you have a job with a corporation, that should be, and you're a male, that should be your thing 24/7. In Japan, that's all you should think about. Even now, that's all you should think about. That's all you should do. Now, I know it's probably more complicated than that, because there is a labor movement in Japan. There are left-wing parties in Japan. So it's probably more complicated than that.
Yeah, I remember the comrade from Japan that came out here.
Yeah. Atsushi. Yeah. So there's still like a lot of that backward thinking, though, especially among the bosses, of course. And so it was about people that had been fired or demoted for asking for paternity leave in Japan. And unions are helping them defend themselves against that. Even if they're not in a union, they're getting help, legal help and stuff like that. So I'm getting this buzzing sound. Do you hear that in yours? Let me just see if I can. Oh, it's just the headphones.
No, it's just the headphones.
Yeah, it's just, yeah. Anyway, so there's all sorts of work. My point was there's all sorts of work that people do, and oftentimes it's the thing that gives their lives meaning. That's the work that's done after the so-called, the thing we usually refer to as work, the paid, the wage slavery part of work, where we're working for a corporation, you know, or working for a government controlled by corporations, you know, and that creates, that is a very coercive, hierarchical environment, the opposite of freedom. Basically, a corporation is like a, you know, a fascist entity, basically a complete autocracy, you know, top down, no voting, no decision making on the part of the people. And I can hear some libertarians would say, oh, well, what about stockholders can vote? That's a complete lie. The way that corporations are set up is that you don't own one person doesn't have one vote. A rich person buys the equivalent of a million votes through their stock ownership. You know what I mean? If you own the majority, or you don't even need the majority of stock, you just need a block of about 30-40%, or even sometimes less, and you can control the voting. You have a virtual veto over everything that's voted on at shareholder meetings when they happen. They don't have to happen. They don't necessarily happen often, and they don't necessarily decide anything real. Depends on the situation, on what the, you know, what the legal situation is, what the situation is in that corporation. So there's no such thing as any kind of real democracy. Even with a union, you're limited. Not theoretically, unions actually could run the show and have at times when there's been general strikes and so on, big strikes. But legally, it's very narrow. You know, there's a thing called management's rights, which is can be a very broad thing that can hurt workers from having any real say in a lot of the things they need to have a say in. My union, for example, they don't ever really address the question of staffing or how people are hired or things like that. There's just a whole, our working conditions in a lot of places aren't really addressed. So there's a whole bunch of stuff they've ceded to management. They've given over to management. Say, yeah, you can keep doing that as long as we were here in some way, and that's really, really dangerous. But getting back to one of the arguments again against socialism that you hear from people that don't understand what socialism is the idea that what about work? I mean, how are you going to force people to work? People will just be lazy or something. And actually, our argument in a nutshell. I'll quote some of the things from this article, but if you had to say it in a soundbite, it'd be the things that make you want to work under socialism are very, very different from the things that make you want to work under capitalism. Under capitalism, you have to.
It's not a want; it's a need.
Yeah, you're forced.
Yeah,
and you can say there's choice under capitalism. You can quit a job. So it's like that famous quote.
You have
quote.
A choice, homelessness, yeah. or you know, a nice choice.
Yeah, it's similar to that quote about the law by Anatoly.
It's like putting a gun in my head, say, do you want to live or do you want to die?
Yeah, it's like Anatoly France, where the law in its majestic equality gives the right for a rich person as well as a poor person to sleep under a bridge or something. You know what I mean? It's obviously satire, meaning that the choices for a rich person are not going to put their lives at jeopardy. But the choices for a person reliant on making money on an income,
selling his labor,
their labor, yeah, that those choices are life and death. So, oftentimes, and if not life and death, between a halfway decent life and just a crappy life that you basically can't do much with, because everything's about money and under capitalism. And so, and we never get paid as a class, as a working class, we never get paid the full amount or even close to it of the value that we produce through our labor. So we're always behind the curve. There's all these things being made that we can't afford to buy. Even the most well paid among the workers don't make up enough people and enough money to buy up all the goods and services that are produced. That's why there's always waste under capitalism. There's always inefficiencies and things that will go.
Have you seen the skyline of Boston lately?
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
You ever see these pictures though of cars that they can't sell in these massive lots? They're just waiting to be like returned to scrap or just sitting there until someone figures out what to do with them.
Yeah.
Or the food and that gets thrown out and all that.
Every year, isn't it? Every year, your car depreciation.
Oh, they say it loses money the minute you take it out of the lot. It depreciates like crazy, which is a dilemma because if you don't get a new car, which supposedly, unless you get, this doesn't always work, but hopefully with a new car, you have less money you have to put into repairs because repairs are freakishly expensive now. Car repairs are really, really expensive. So you have these things like you see on TV now, they have car repair insurance that never existed before. If it did, it was something that only like, happens, race car
you go,
drivers
you got the insurance.
Well, like our insurance, right?
Clause.
Yeah, you're paying into it. You're paying into it, and they're gonna take money out. They might not cover everything.
Deductibles.
Yeah, it's like pet insurance. Think about every time you see insurance raise its ugly head under capitalism, which is always a ripoff insurance. It's because that stuff is so expensive, people can't afford it to just pay off the top anymore. So you have pet insurance now because veterinary costs are so huge now. You have car maintenance insurance, repair insurance, because car repair costs
are
ridiculous now.
That's one.
Health insurance, right, way back, yeah. So anyway, the soundbite argument is that under socialism, you would want to work because you would see the results of your labor right in front of you in better living standards, consistently improving living standards. I mean, drastically improving living standards, like a shorter work week with no cut in pay initially, where you would have more time to participate.
Leisure,
participate in planning the economy, actually, if you want to. If you want to be part of those decision-making. And you would want to, because it would affect your community. It would affect your area. It would affect if there's still nation states, your nation, it would affect you internationally, pollution and stuff, you know?
Travel,
You would see you'd have health care, you'd have a decent life, you'd have good education, you would see all these things that are you can have for the first time that most working people couldn't have or couldn't have on a regular basis. And because of that, because you're invested in the system in terms of your time, your thinking, your labor, and labor can be shared around. So you could bring in automation at a level that capitalism couldn't even dream of because you'd have more resources going into research and so on, more resources going into people's basic lives, so they wouldn't have to worry if they lost a job, you know. And also the secret they don't tell you under capitalism about automation is that it's often extremely expensive. So it's actually cheaper to put in and maintain. So it's actually cheaper often to keep exploiting human labor in things that could be easily automated from a technological standpoint, but not a capitalist make money standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
So all these things would be different under socialism and result in a real, I think, a real loyalty to the system. You know, real like, this is so much better than capitalism. This is really good. And the goals shift. Then the goals would be, I'm going to be, I really could be an excellent whatever I decide to be, athlete or piano player or something,
film director,
what becomes hot? What was hobbies at best under capitalism that a lot of people were shut out of become vocations under socialism. What instead of one Einstein, you'd have a million. You know, you'd have people. Not that everyone would be a genius, but that there would be a lot the people that through genetics or whatever, and through education, there'd be a lot more of that happening. I'm not trying to create like a Brave New World scenario where there'd be genetic manipulation. I'm saying there would be actually. There probably would be. Unfortunately, that's going that way, but. But I'm just saying that where the opportunities don't exist under capitalism, they would exist under socialism. And then different goals like space travel maybe or whatever and maybe trying to find other places to live in space and all that. I don't want to sound like it's all going to be Star Trek Next Generation or something, because it'll be better than that. But the point
careful
is,
what you wish for. You might be unraveling another civilization that's a lot more advanced than us, and we become the Indians in this scenario.
That's right. That's right. That's a problem. So like and there would be problems under socialism, but the problem solving would be not in the hands of technocrats backed up by corporate CEOs who don't care in a lot of cases. They want a problem solved at the cheapest level possible for cost, because they don't want to pay more taxes and they want resources in society to go to the corporations. You know what I mean? Yeah. So and that's what's happening now. There's still people I know that are concerned about. That's putting it nicely, welfare cheats or whatever, you know? And it's just completely insane. The biggest welfare recipients are corporations now. I mean, think about the land they take. Think about what the cities give them to come in and set up. They gave GE, Boston, the city of Boston gave GE millions of dollars to come and set up its headquarters in Boston. And then they did, as they were downsizing, right, as they were laying people off and stuff, it did nothing for Boston. Just was a corporate handout, welfare handout for GE, General Electric. Boy, I've lived under the shadow of that corporation my whole life. I grew up in Schenectady, New York, and around that area, and a lot of people worked for GE. It was the biggest manufacturing corporation, you know.
They make everything.
They used to make a lot of stuff.
Engines.
They used to make everything from appliances to jet engines, to turbines that are used in many different manufacturing things. And they used to be very diversified. And what happened was, you know, they got greedy. Well, that's a simplistic explanation. Of course, they're always greedy. What happened was there was a big strike in 1969, and that's kind of a big turning point. They decided that they were going to stop hiring and stuff, you know? And they slowed down their hiring, and then the recession hit, 74, 75. Then you've got in the 80s, they decided to get into financial, or 80s into 90s, into financial stuff. So they basically became like a kind of a, like GM,
Merrill
like
Lynch.
General Motors.
They linked up with Merrill Lynch.
They got into, I don't know if they did that or not, but they got into their financial, they tried to become like a big financial player. And then in the Great Recession, 2007, 2009, they lost a lot of that money, or they were even getting out of that before that, I'm not sure which. But they started to like unload a lot of the things they used to do. Meanwhile, the Schenectady GE plant's still open, has been making turbines, but a little smaller and smaller workforce, smaller and smaller, you know, operation. And but they polluted the heck out of the area, right? I had a lot of my relatives working there, and who one of whom I hear two different stories. My grandfather, who I never knew, on the Polish side of my family, he either died from porcelain poisoning there, or he died from pneumonia. How do you say that? Pneumonia. Pneumonia. That's a hard word. Pneumonia. Died from pneumonia related to working there. And it was something related to the work, because they gave my grandmother a settlement, a tiny amount of money. Didn't really help. She was really poor. And and I had an uncle. My father worked there for a short time. They promised him, I told this story on the air before. It's an interesting story. A lot of workers were enticed to go to World War II to enlist. With the promise they would get their old jobs back, and at their level of pay and whatever, you know, whatever their job level was. And my father didn't need that. He was gung-ho. He was young, and he and a friend.
So when the Japanese attacked, he was ready.
Well, he and a friend were already up in Canada trying to enter the Canadian Air Force, or whatever they had up there. I don't know if they had an Air Force yet, but something. They wanted to be in the Air Force. There wasn't really an Air Force yet, I don't think, in the U.S. There was the Army Air Corps. They had in Canada. But yeah, while they were in Canada, the thing hit. Pearl Harbor hit. So they came back down. They got in the Army Air Corps. And but there was that promise on the table, which was a factor, you know?
That was like the Tuskegee. It was a Tuskegee airman that was interviewed, and he's like, I had a lot of flight time. It's like, how'd that happen if they had discrimination in the U.S.? No, I went to Canada.
Yeah.
I was flying for the Royal Canadian Air Force, which was, you know, fighting the Blitzkrieg during the Blitzkrieg of, you know, when they were bombing London.
Yep.
So they were like, oh, so you do have experience, a lot of, you know, with the Jerry. I'm sorry, they called them Jerrys back then, the Germans.
Right, right, right.
He's like, yeah, I didn't go for America. I went with the Canadians.
Yeah, yeah. So my father and I were in the American Army Air Corps, they called it, I guess. And the point of the story is that when he got back, when he got out, nah, that promise was not kept. And he worked in a GE plant in Schenectady where the leadership had been militant before the war, had been strong, led by the Communist Party, which I asked them about, because when I read about that, I said, hey, wait a minute, you worked there when the Communist Party was in the leadership. He goes, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, wow. Because my father was very conservative, right? So I'm like,
was he like the Archie Bunker?
All of a sudden he's kind of, a little bit, yeah. But in real life, that's some nasty stuff. I didn't like it. So he was like, but this time he was calm. We got in the discussion. He was very calm about it. I was really surprised. Because he could rail against, you know, commie this, commie that, when it came to the Vietnam War or something. But when it came to Schenectady GE, he's like, oh, yeah.
To what they call livelihood. Yeah, I do remember the communist party.
That's what he said.
Now, what happened to Pinko and all that other stuff?
It was weird. It was a strange, strange moment. And he was like, he goes, this is a funny way to put it, but he goes, we knew who they were. Okay. They supported them. He said something to the effect of, as long as things were okay, we supported them. And then during the war, as you know, a lot of people don't know this, the Communist Party, which had leadership in like 49% of the CIO unions in the United States, they totally took a right-wing turn following Stalin's orders.
To go with the Democrats.
They already went with the Democrats. This was worse. They became ultra-patriotic. So they actually, because everything was to defend, in their minds, everything was to defend the Soviet Union, right? To defend Stalinism. So they thought the best way to do that was to become hyper-nationalist in all the countries that they worked in, including the United States. So they went along with the government clamping down on unions during World War II. And they lost a lot of their support because of that. And people wonder, like, how did McCarthyism get its way in the United States? Well, part of it, this isn't the whole story, but part of it was that the Communist Party was a lot more popular back in the 30s than it was by 1953, because they had pissed away a lot of their support.
Yep.
By you know, a lot of things, like supporting the Democrats, for example, instead of starting a new party or helping to start a new party, like being underground in some cases, trying to hide who they were, other cases being open, but supporting the Democrats or whatever. And then during the war, being more patriotic than the right-wingers. I mean, it was crazy. People were just... You have to be consistent with people so that over time they understand and learn to trust you. That's something that there's leftist groups now that are supporting Sanders and the Democrats, and they think this is going to help us later when we're going to say, oh, wait a minute, we need a workers' party. And then people are going to say, why? Here's another stand. Here's a new Sanders.
You had
Sanders.
A chance. Here's already. A,
no, well, you, they, you, some you of them will say that. The smart, you know, the really on top of things people will say that. But some of them will also say, like, well, why? What was, we had Sanders before, now we have this new person. And they're like, Sanders, why don't we support them again like you did? You know what I mean? They're going to say, well, we'll just reform the Democratic Party like you were trying to do. Oh, no, we weren't trying that. We were trying this clever strategy of walking with you to, someone actually said this to me, we have to walk with them as they go through the experience of the Democratic Party, as if this was a new experience, as if we don't have generations and generations of experience of the Democratic Party being a capitalist political party, but sucking in workers through progressive or left populism, a la Sanders or FDR or Kucinich or Upton Sinclair, or, I mean, there's just so many examples of people that have come into the Democratic Party as candidates, because you can't really be a member, but they've gone as candidates and said, I'm still a radical, I'm still left-wing, but I'm in the Democratic Party, I'm just using their ballot line. Well, they're using you. That's what's happening. You got their brand on your head now. So when the workers see the next round of cuts coming from the Democratic Party government, Democratic Party state government, Democratic Party city council, they're going to look for an alternative, and they're going to vote Republican or some... I mean, a lot of Trump's votes came from people that were suffering under from the Great Recession under Obama, in the Obama years, you know? So,
didn't he win Michigan? Who's...
Yeah, yeah. And
Michigan
and
went red.
It's overstated. It wasn't... A lot of working class people, most working class people did not vote for Trump. But if you want energized working class people fighting for a good future, that's not going to come through the Democratic Party. There's too many that see through that stuff, and it leads to apathy, or it leads to ping pong voting, you know, one corporate party or another. And I like ping pong, but not in this case, not in the duopoly of the corporations, the corporate political parties. So, you know, you have to have something that that is theirs. I mean, these clearly are not our political parties. The Democratic Party and Republican parties are not ours. They're not ours. We're not part of it. Even if we vote for them, we're not part of it. You know what I mean? It's like that George Carlin thing. They're in a club and you're not part of it.
They don't give up
anything about you.
All so, they are is one yeah, big, yeah, you know what, yeah, waving part.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, you have Sanders.
He'll, I miss that he'll, guy. He'll, I wish he was yeah, still alive.
You have Sanders talk like, well, every once in a while he'll say, well, you know, it's not about me. It's about mass movements that we need to get these things done. And guess what? But then the next thing out is send money to my campaign. Vote for me. Vote for these other Democrats, you know, that are good. They're good Democrats. There's always been good Democrats versus bad Democrats, quote unquote. And it's funny how they switch positions a lot of time. Like on the F-35 trillion dollar jet fighter, Sanders supports that. Is he a bad Democrat when he does that? Yes, he is. Right? But all, you know, there's things that they all agree on, including Sanders, continuing capitalism. So they're all bad Democrats in that sense. Mm-hmm. You know, don't buy the lie that anyone in the Democratic Party work as a politician, as an operator, as an operative, that they can be a socialist. They can't. That the two things don't go together at all. But you have leftists going around saying, "Oh yeah, you know, we're gonna walk with these people. We're gonna
oh, like you're gonna teach them something.
We're gonna teach them something by confirming their delusions and helping them in their illusions in the Democratic Party. No, that's not how you do that. You be honest with them. You tell them the truth. There's this quote by Trotsky about when the Fourth International was formed in 1938, he said, tell the truth to the people. That's one of the things we're founding our new organization on. They're breaking with Stalinism. There's no way out through the Stalinist parties anymore. Anyway, but the original thing was back to Stalinism was the Communist Party. So they blew that political support that they had built up. At a really grassroots level, real working class level. My father never had it. I think he graduated from high school in the sense of one, you know, tiny little school in the middle of nowhere that like churned people out when they were 16 because they could work. Okay, that's a high school degree, I guess.
All right, go.
Yeah, no, that's what it was about. You know, in fact, I asked my father. I go, well, one thing that happened after the war was the GI Bill. Why didn't you take that GI Bill and go to college? And he goes, he thought for a minute, and he's like, I was a tough guy. I said, what? What are you talking about? He goes, I didn't know anyone that went to college. I didn't know what that was. I was a tough guy. He quit GE because they did not get, the point of the story was they did not get back their jobs, their pay, their benefits. GE messed with them. There was a big strike in 1946 and 49, I think, or maybe just 49 in GE. My father didn't wait around for that. He went and got a job as a truck driver, unfortunately non-union, with big mistake.
There was no Teamsters back then?
They weren't organized.
Not
I don't know
that
why.
Particular truck company.
No, they weren't organized. And that was a real problem. I wish they were. My life would have been a lot better. a lot better. So it has been a lot better. But anyway, the point is that, so he goes, yeah, a tough guy. But the point of that story was like, he didn't know anybody. And it's just the college just wasn't in his head, you know? Years and years later, he goes to the community college, take a couple courses, aced them. He goes, oh, it's pretty easy. I'm like, yeah, college is no mystery. You know, everyone can go to college. Every single person can go to college in some way, you know. But it's got to be free. It's got to be free. You can't attach a cost to it because some people, then you're going to have people that just can't afford it. You know, state schools now are ridiculously expensive. And, I have a son and a daughter. My son is older. He's entering high school. We don't know any way we're gonna be able to afford college. Germany.
No, that's another.
Apparently has free college if you want to learn German.
There's a place called Slovenia, which is kind of border with Germany.
Yeah, I know where it is. Yeah, yeah.
Free.
And Germany also supposedly.
I've seen supposedly. Where Americans. I'm like, where'd you get Slovenia? What? I gotta look that up in a map. Wait a minute. What's that?
Yeah. Well,
or France.
Nah, I don't know about France. France.
They take care of their own.
Well,
mostly.
Okay, so France is a better system than here, but it's heavily examined up, you know, so that kind of gets.
So you got to keep up your scores to get some kind of funding.
People get kind of They can't go because they don't do the exams, and that's not fair either, because because prep for the exams is easier for the richer people there. But there's also some catch there, because I was reading about it. I don't know. It's turned into, like, over the years since I was there, turned into, like, there's these fees and stuff. It started to make it really hard for working class students to go, even if they get the grades. So the test scores.
I remember
and all
in
that.
Portugal, it's like, oh yeah, if you got good grades, the government takes care of your tab or something like that. Uh-huh. But you got to keep up your grades.
Yeah,
you know, you can't go, oh, I was an A student, I'm going back to a C to a D, and think you're going. You know.
Well, my problem is that a lot of the things that existed in Europe when I was there, living for a short time in France, and then some trips I've taken there since then, and I stopped traveling, doing all that kind of stuff in like 2005. I haven't had the money to go anywhere except for certain conferences. But the thing is that stuff's changed for the worse. Just like, I mean, it's still better than here. But, you know, when you hear Sanders, for example, talk about Scandinavia and all that, you got to take a real close look at Scandinavia. It's not what it was in the post-war upswing, which it only was that because of the left-wing political parties, not the Democrat, not the liberal parties like the Democrats, but truly left-wing political parties, plus a enraged labor movement, plus isolation not getting destroyed during World War II. All these factors came together that created what some people call socialism. It's not. It's still the capitalists are in power. And if a right-wing or a conservative or even a liberal government gets in power in those countries, they start to tear away at the social welfare. So union density in Sweden was up to like 90%, over 90%. At the height of the post-war upswing, for post-World War II upswing, that's declined. You got neo-fascist parties running around because there's now more poverty, especially among migrant workers that end up in Scandinavia, but also among others that are already there. You've got all sorts of basic capitalist problems of eating away at benefits and stuff, and the workers are like, a lot of workers are sometimes like frogs in a boiling pot of water, or what is that my metaphor? Lobsters or something?
Crabs.
No. I think it's frogs. Really, but you're in a pot. If you stick a frog in a pot of water and then
warm.
You heat it up, and it's a normal
gradually.
Temperature, it won't know that it's heating up enough, and it'll die. So a lot of times, workers, it's not our fault usually, because of the education system and the corporate media is lulling us to sleep a lot. Everything's fine. Everything's okay. This is the best country in the world. Status quo. Blah, 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 blah. And meanwhile, it's heating up. The class struggle is heating up, but we're not struggling. And that's a huge, huge problem in the United States, of course, but even in countries that are called a socialist or whatever. I mean, you mentioned France. Of course, there's a huge movement right now in France to stop them from cutting the pension system. But anyway, back to this work ethic under socialism, couple cool things. A new poll by the Pew Research Center reveals that 42% of Americans have a positive view of socialism. Those who have a negative view still constitute a majority, but a slim one, only 55%. Other surveys have turned up over the past few years. So they, of those 55% of respondents who had a negative view of socialism, the top reason they gave was that it undermines the work ethic. So one of the main arguments, like we said earlier, against socialism about how people wouldn't work, this is from this survey, a Pew Research Center poll. Of the 55% that had a negative view, that still had a negative view of socialism, they said undermines the work ethic. So this author, Megan Day, starts writing about that. Well, what does that mean? Talks about the history of the work ethic in the United States. So, for example, we're at the point now in the United States where at least 134 countries have laws establishing the maximum length of the work week, but the United States doesn't. In fact, unlike many other countries, the U.S. workers aren't federally entitled to paid holidays, vacation days, sick leave, or parental leave. You don't have to get any of that stuff. As a result, Americans work 137 more hours per year than Japanese workers. Remember how it used to be back in the 80s? You'd hear about Japanese workers work
more.
They
don't stop working.
Guess what?
Remember that movie that, what's his name, Mike? The guy that played Batman in the 80s.
Michael Keaton.
Yeah. Where they're like in Dotson.
Yep.
Kind of goes through his... They take over.
I know
and they
the one
overwork
you mean.
The American.
Yeah.
Remember that movie?
Yeah.
That was a good example of what the Japanese workers were like, you know.
Yeah. But now, American workers work 137 more hours per year than Japanese workers. 260 more hours per year than British workers, and 499 more hours per year than French workers. Now, I know some people, personally, who they would hear this, and they would feel a certain pride that they're worked to death. They're like good mules, you know? They like being whipped, you know? And I'd be like, no, wait a minute. You had to understand, this is work that people are forced to do to survive and barely survive, or sometimes not even survive because the pay is too low or the conditions they live in are so rotten, you know? They can't afford health care. There's too much crime, whatever's going on to hurt them, you know? Every hour worked is an hour that can never be retrieved, this author says. Interesting way to put it. Every hour worked is an hour that can never be retrieved. It's also an hour from which economic elites profit. She means capitalists, afraid to say it, which is funny in Jacobin, but anyway. And they aren't sharing those profits. The ideology that places a premium on, quote, the work ethic helps keep this unequal system in place. It shames workers for being, quote unquote, lazy if they register an objection to how hard or long they're expected to work. It also rewards workers with a sense of pride if they spend their days making profits for somebody else, for the big capitalists. I threw that in, big capitalists, without complaining. Think of that pride as a sort of consolation prize. That's kind of what I was getting at. And, you know, I understand that. I mean, I've had jobs where I'm working so hard that I turn into people I'm working with and we're just like, we share a common suffering, you know, so we make jokes about it and talk about how much we're going to work next week and all that kind of stuff. And there's a certain camaraderie or whatever in that, you know what I mean? Doesn't make it right. And then the same people are really hurting, you know? Like when I worked, you know, I was lucky it was a union factory, but they were doing forced overtime. And the union hadn't had to deal with that yet. But I just happened to be there when they started really kicking in with forced overtime, the company. So the way the union had to deal with it, they tried to negotiate, management just said screw off, was when we went on strike and we won the strike. The thing that triggered the strike was forced overtime. We stopped that, plus we got other things, like a dental plan we didn't have before, stuff like that, pay raise, blah, blah, blah. But I remember guys that would one day be sort of almost bragging, myself included, about how much we were going to work the next week, were soon after that saying, well, yeah, the overtime money's good, but I can't see my family.
I don't spend it.
I don't have time to spend it.
I don't have leisure time.
Yeah, I remember one time we snuck off.
That the bakery place?
Yeah, Albany, New York.
That's the one you told me the story of the Italians were more radical.
The Italians.
You're like, hey.
Yeah, there was.
They're like, no, nothing's coming in, nothing's coming out.
Yeah, you know? There were some underground communist workers there. And that you'd see like communist graffiti.
The sickle and the hammer.
Yeah, hammer and sickle, yeah. And they were, I put two and two together. I think it was a group of Italian workers that were there. One of them was this really short guy. And I kind of felt sorry for him. He was like so short, you know. We had a lot. I have other stories. But anyways, this one guy, they put him the night of the strike. We went out on strike at midnight. I was on the third shift, so I went out at midnight. And I get in my car, and I've already talked to the picket captain. I've got my assignment for the next day, where to go picket and all this. And then I'm driving out, and all of a sudden, this guy is like going like this. This short guy. He's still in his uniform, white uniform. And I thought he was waving. So I'm like, ah, see you later. See you tomorrow. And he jumps in front of the car. And I slam my brakes on. I'm like, what are you doing, man? I could have killed you. And the guy didn't speak English that well. So he comes up to my car, and he's looking in the windows. He's like looking at all the windows, looking around. And he's like, okay, bye.
See if he's taking
anything. Yeah, his whole job was to make sure we didn't take anything out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they didn't want us to take anything out. For good reasons. They didn't want to, you know, oh, the workers are stealing, or, you know, propaganda like that.
No, more like we don't want the product being sold.
Right, exactly.
You know, yeah, we exactly. want to stop.
Yeah, we don't want anyone.
Hurt them.
We don't want anyone.
In the pockets.
We don't want anyone, like, playing a game where they're helping management by taking out product.
Yeah, yeah, take out the product. Yo, go deliver to this grocery store or whatever.
But also, there is an element of like you want a disciplined strike. You don't want like, oh, we're going to destroy all the machines. Oh, no, we're not going to destroy the machines. Those are ours in a way.
Yeah.
They should be ours. We're not going to do that. Anyway, so
back social to social ownership, they call it, right?
Social ownership, it should be. Public ownership, social ownership. Anyway, so we should dispense. This author is interesting. She says we should dispense with work ethic as it's currently understood, and we should replace it with something better, taking pride in and deriving meaning from the nature of our work itself, not from the mere ability to perform it without complaining. Under capitalism, lots of workers hate their jobs, but they have to perform them anyway in order to afford the basic necessities of life. Karl Marx was concerned For example, Karl Marx, one of the founders of Marxism, of socialism, was concerned about the way capitalism alienates labor or turns the worker into a drone detached from the goods they're producing or services they're rendering, with no control over how they spend the majority of their waking hours and no clear sense of purpose. Marx concluded that alienation of labor is a natural consequence of a system where work is allocated not based on what society needs, but what's profitable for a few. So I think this